Tradio, nourishing the soul of the digital generation.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and you're listening to Cradio. Today, I'm joined by Professor Nicholas Tonti-Filippini. Professor Tonti-Filippini is an Associate Dean and Head of Bioethics at the John Paul II Institute for Marriage and Family in Melbourne. He has authored a number of publications and has served as a member of the Australian Health Ethics Committee of the National Health and Medical Research Council. We're going to be talking about an upcoming conference being organised by the JP2 Institute in partnership with the Life, Marriage and Family Office in Melbourne. It's the National Fertility Conference, and I'm told it's the first of its kind in Australia. Professor, what has brought about the need for such a conference?
Well, there are three different methods of natural family planning that are evidence-based and three different national agencies that run them. And they do really great work. At the Institute here, we engage all three of them to teach our students, because we want our students to know each of the methods. And given that they haven't come together before, and given that there are lots of developments in this area, especially on the medical side of things, we thought it would be a good idea to bring them together. They greeted that with enthusiasm. So it's going to be a really interesting conference, because they used to meet annually or biannually themselves and as independent agencies, but this will be the first time that they've come together, and we've also been the first time that there's been a medical meeting of fertility awareness doctors meeting across all methods.
I had a look over the brochure and the program for the conference, and it looks like it's covering a whole range of things, and it's pulling some really notable experts together. But one of the major focuses is on infertility and the various issues and advances surrounding that. So first of all, just to step back a bit, could you clarify how a person or couple might be defined as infertile?
Usually people are considered infertile if they've been trying to get pregnant for more than 12 months. If they're a bit older, then it might be considered at the end of 6 months, but generally 12 months is when they're considered to have a problem. When you look at that group of people, about half of them will get pregnant within 5 years. And if you do nothing, so that the base infertility rate, that is people who end up being infertile after all the treatments have been tried and all those things, end up being something like about 3% in Australia, much higher in developing countries, but in Australia about 3%. So you go from about 10 to 15% down to about 3%.
Thanks for clarifying that, because I know sometimes we use the term infertile and often we think, well, that means they can never have children. But obviously there are a lot of underlying factors that we may not be aware of. So what are some of the causes that may contribute to couples who have trouble conceiving?
Look, sometimes they're things that happen from birth, the fallopian tubes haven't developed or parts of the male anatomy haven't developed and that sort of thing. Sometimes it's a result of illness. In men, things like mumps and so on may cause problems with fertility. Sometimes it can be the result of an infection, especially the sexually transmissible infections can cause infertility. For women, things like endometriosis, which is where the type of tissue that lines the uterus and which develops and then is shed during each cycle, some of that tissue can form in other parts of her abdomen, so in her fallopian tubes or and so on, and that's usually a painful condition, but it can also cause complications that cause infertility. So the other thing is general health conditions can affect infertility. So that if people are overweight or if they're smoking, if they don't get enough exercise, if their diet isn't right, if they've got some hormonal problems, some hormonal diseases, that can affect infertility. So if you treat the general health, very often you can improve the physical health in both men and women.
And to me it seems that, I suppose, in our current society, there seems to be this attitude, okay, well, forget about those problems. We'll just bypass all of that with IVF, which is often presented, I suppose, as the solution. I mean, the church's stance on this is well known, but it's often presented as it is the only solution or the perfect solution for couples who are having trouble conceiving. Is this the case?
Oh, no. Look, the couples who are on IVF programs will tell you it's nothing like the perfect solution. It's very difficult to do IVF. In all sorts of ways, and for both men and women, but especially for the women, the process takes control of the hormone system. They administer drugs to block the hormones that are produced within the pituitary, within the brain, to control fertility. They block those and they introduce their own. So it's a managed cycle that they have, so that they can get lots of eggs rather than the one or two that normally get produced by a woman in a cycle. So it's very intrusive, quite difficult. And the success rates aren't that great. When you actually look at, if a woman has one cycle, that is, she has general anaesthetic and the surgery and the drugs and all the rest of it, and picks up somewhere between 8 and 12 eggs on average, and then they transfer those after they fertilize them in several different transfer procedures, her chances of getting pregnant from that are about 23% on the state government figures. So not that high. If she's prepared to have lots and lots of cycles, then that can get up to around about 50%. So it's not great. And in fact, the figures for IVF are not much different from the 5-year figure if you did nothing. So it's not hugely successful. One of the problems here is that IVF is seen as that's something you can get on with and do sort of straight away. And so that a lot of the people who go on IVF can conceive naturally, and especially if you treat the conditions that may affect their fertility. So you can, for a lot of those couples, you can achieve pregnancy if you treat the causes of their infertility. One of the really important things in all of this is for women to know when their peak fertility is, and that's identifiable. And so women can be taught to recognize the symptoms that they have that identify the start of what's called the fertile window and when they ovulate. Both of those events are noticeable. The egg only survives 12 to 24 hours, so it's quite important to be able to know when that fertile period is. And sperm don't survive unless the woman is in that fertile period, because the sperm need the conditions to be right in her cervix, in the neck of her womb, where the sperm need to travel through. And so the cervical mucus there needs to be right to allow that to happen. So it being able to pick that's really important, and well, that's one of the really important things to assist a couple with is how to recognize their fertility. And when you do that, you can pick up any abnormalities. So if they're not cycling normally, if they don't have normal pattern of cervical mucus and normal ovulation, then you can treat that. So you can introduce hormones to improve ovulation. If the ovulation isn't strong and may have difficulty sustaining a pregnancy, because when a woman has ovulated, what's called the corpus luteum, that is what's left the little pocket that produces the egg, it keeps producing hormones to sustain a pregnancy and keep the lining of the uterus thick to allow the embryo to implant. You can give her those hormones, the progesterones, you can give her those hormones in order to help sustain the pregnancy. So there are lots of things you can do once you can assess her cycle and what's actually happening.
And so you mentioned that the success rate when using these natural fertility methods comparatively with IVF is higher.
That's you've got to be careful there. I mean, there are women, there are couples who won't get pregnant naturally who IVF can help. So if, for instance, if a woman has completely blocked fallopian tubes, then unless you'd operate to clear those, then she won't be able to get pregnant. So there are two options. There's operating to clear the blockage in the fallopian tube, which is a fairly successful procedure, although it's not done as often now as it used to be, because they tend to go straight to IVF rather than do that. And then there's IVF. So those are the two possibilities. But it's a question really of, with the natural fertility, of being perhaps a little more patient, because IVF, you can go straight to IVF and you can start a cycle and do all of that and attempt to get pregnant. So a lot of women go to IVF because they're older and so they don't think they've got a lot of time left, and that puts pressure on them to try and get something started straight away.
So given that would give that extra assurance for women who may be later on in years or who may have some of those issues that you raised, where IVF would seem like it may be the most viable solution, there are a lot of people who would say that they're pro-life, but they don't necessarily recognise the issue with IVF. Would you possibly be able to outline some of the issues surrounding that?
When a couple comes to see me to talk about IVF and you know, trying to make their decisions, the first thing I do is take them to the website of the IVF team that they're looking at and go through the decisions that they'll have to make. And I also take them to the government website to look at success rates and that sort of thing. One of the major things here is that IVF, in the way it's practiced, produces lots of embryos. And when you look at the rates that the government publishes, only about 3.5% of those embryos that are produced in IVF actually ever survive to be born. So there's a very, very high loss rate of embryos. So the first issue to look at is that question of loss rate of embryos and what I guess in ethics we talk about the status of the embryo. The embryo is formed when a sperm and an egg get together and that first cell is formed. So it's just a single cell to start with, but it has the capacity to develop to human adulthood. So the whole thing's, you know, sort of switched on, so to speak. The sperm and the egg are actually, in a sense, dying until they meet up. And when they meet up, they form this incredible cell that has the capacity to develop to a human adulthood. And so the question is, you know, what is the status of that new life, that cell? For Catholics, we see that as the beginning. That's where we began. We see that while it's just a single cell, it's also where we think a new life begins with a new human soul, and the story, the journey of that life has begun. So that's the first issue. The other issues are more complex, and when I talk with couples, I get them to explore the nature of their marriage and how they see their relationship. And, you know, usually people, this is a very private area for people, their relationship to each other. And for religious people, it's a very sacred area because the capacity of a man and a woman when they make love to produce a child means an incredible relationship to God, because they're sharing in that capacity to create new life. So they become co-creators with God in that capacity. So for a couple to make love has that incredible overlay of the possibility of producing a new life. And there's also then the way in which that making love, that intimacy that they share, that gift of one to the other, is what nurtures their relationship, establishes their union, so to speak, and also establishes the heart of the family. The love between the husband and the wife that they express in this very special way forms that unity that strengthens the nature of the family unit. When you look at IVF, all of that process of producing a new life is taken away from the couple and happens in the laboratory. So it's being done by a technologist who simply uses the couple to get the sperm and the eggs, and then it's the technologist that produces the life in the laboratory. And so you've got these embryos formed, and I guess one of the issues there is this very new relationship that formed when IVF first started of someone being in that position of in a sense manufacturing a new life, of bringing the sperm and egg together and being in quality control over that new life. And so there's a relationship which the church refers to as a relationship of domination, where the technologist is in a dominant position over the embryo. And it's that relationship that I guess is of most concern, because it's out of that relationship that quality control is exercised, embryos may be selected, some may be destroyed, some may be used for research, and so on. So that it's that new relationship between the technologist and the embryo that didn't exist before IVF that is, I guess, of most concern in this. And so a couple who engage in IVF will find themselves, in a sense, onlookers to what the technologist does in the laboratory. One of the things I found interesting in my work in this area was to find that with Orthodox Jews, they actually insist on keeping custody of the embryo. That is, that they have someone with the embryo at all times. They don't leave the embryo alone in the laboratory, even though the embryo may even be frozen. They insist that there be some supervision of the embryo. So there's a sense of maintaining that sense of respect for who the embryo is. But the real concern here is that relationship. And, if couples allow me to, and so on, I mean, you can only, when you talk with a couple, you can only talk to them about the things they want to talk about. So if they're prepared to talk about their relationship, if they're prepared to talk about these things, then we'll explore all those sorts of things, and they can then make their decisions about whether they want to be involved.
You used a word which I thought was quite interesting in this context. You used the word manufacture. And I'm thinking about often now when I go to shopping centres, it's becoming more common for me to see IVF ads around the place. They seem to be popping up everywhere. And it does seem like fertility has become somewhat of an industry. Do you think that as a result of that, there's an inordinate focus being placed on IVF and therefore a lack of awareness on natural fertility?
Oh, look, I think that's right. People just think, and I've heard senior gynecologists saying, look, the young gynecologists just refer infertile couples straight off to IVF, and the young GPs do the same. They don't even think about exploring what can be done to so the couple can conceive naturally and not have to go through all of this laboratory process. And so, yes, it's unfortunate that it's gone that way. It's also the case that in Australia, IVF now is owned by two major corporations right across the country, so that they bought up the IVF team. So it's a very much a for-profit process. The IVF clinics are private clinics, and they are for-profit. And so that kind of changes things, and there's been a lot of concern expressed about the fees that are charged, because it is a duopoly. If you want to go to IVF, you go to one of these two companies, really, and you know, you don't really have any other option. So it's quite a different area. The other thing about IVF is that it's a focus upon a process and getting a pregnancy out of that process. Infertility is a very complex thing. It's not just a matter of trying to get a child. There was a government publication from the Institute for Family Studies called A Child is Not a Cure for Infertility. All of the difficulties that go with being infertile, the emotional aspects of it and so on, remain even if you have a child. So having a child via IVF doesn't overcome the infertility. Whereas if you do have a child naturally, and so in other words, if your fertility is restored, then you're in a different situation emotionally. So that the treatment of a person's natural fertility is likely to be much more holistic, and more about being concerned for the woman, for her husband, for their relationship, and concerned beyond just getting a child, concerned also if they don't have a child, concerned to ensure that they have the supports that they need. So the whole area of fertility assessment clinics, which pursue this matter of treating natural fertility, are quite different in their approach than the approach taken by an IVF clinic.
Mm. So this conference that we spoke about earlier, the National Fertility Conference, which is coming up on the 19th to the 21st of September in Melbourne, that will be looking at this holistic approach, and as you said, it will be bringing together some of the key players in research in the area. Could you speak more about that and what people might expect and who the conference is for?
It's been a very complex process. I mean, I initially offered to the three agencies that they could run their own conferences and they'd come together for whatever they wanted to come together for, certainly for catering and that sort of thing, for morning tea and afternoon tea and lunch and so on. But they decided that they'd like to have a medical meeting as part of it. So one whole day of the weekend is given over to a medical conference, and with so many doctors interested in the area, we've actually been able to bring some international experts. So we've got Dr. Phil Boyle from Ireland, who's a fertility specialist, Dr. Raffaella Pingitore, who's an obstetrician and gynecologist from Switzerland. She's an Italian, but she's from Switzerland, who's specialised in research in this area, and Associate Professor Len Blackwell, who's a research biochemist from New Zealand. So they will meet up with the Australian experts. So we're going to have it's a very strong group of people that we've got for that conference. So that's the medical part of it, but it's open to other people. It's principally a medical conference, but we've got a cheaper registration rate for people who just want to come along and observe it rather than and who are not medical, but they can come along and be part of that. On the same day, the fertility awareness agencies have people who go into schools to teach kids about fertility, and they wanted something done on that topic. So we the institute, which specialises in that area, we've organised a program for them on sex education, and so that will be happening at the same time as the medical meeting for those people who are not so interested in the medical things but do want to be able to talk about sex education and so on. And sex education is in the national curriculum now, so it's quite important. So that will be for school teachers, but also for people who visit schools to talk about these topics. Then we've got the three agencies are each running their own conference, and so they've got a one-day conference that they'll be running, and that they'll be running their own programs on the kinds of things that they do. And they're always looking to recruit people who are interested in these areas, so those conferences will serve to help to recruit new people into their agencies to help with these areas, people who want to be trained to be educators in fertility. And then at the same time, the doctors felt that they didn't have enough time on one day to discuss all the things they wanted to discuss, so we have arranged for them a day on medical ethics. And there are lots of ethical issues that arise in this area, as you'd appreciate. So we're running two sessions at the same time as the agency conferences. We'll run a stream on medical ethics. And before all this starts, we're going to have a public forum that anybody can come to, and it's free, and we'll have a supper with it. That's on the Friday the 19th of September at 7 o'clock. We'll be running this forum on infertility and the needs of infertile couples, looking particularly at grief and loss in infertility, and also looking at the range of things that are available. And Dr. Raffaella Pingitore will be speaking there as the medical expert, and there'll be a panel of people, including a psychologist, who will be talking about those issues. They will also have the Australian Catholic Bishops Conference have a committee that deals with the fertility issues, and the bishop who chairs that, Bishop Gerard Hanna from Wagga, will be speaking at that too. He'll be talking about grief and loss in relation to infertility and the need to have a pastoral response to it.
It certainly is a huge program. I'll put a direct link on the Cradio website for that, and it's also available on the Jumple 2 Institute website.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Nicholas Tonti-Filippini from the Jumple 2 Institute in Melbourne talking about their upcoming National Fertility Conference. For more information, you can head to jp2institute.org, that's jp2institute with the number 2, or follow the links on the Cradio website. And for more talks, interviews and shows, head to cradio.org.au.
cradio.org.au.